going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I'm your host, Sean Kane. How we doing, gang? I'm doing well, man. If you've been following the conversation on Twitter, I certainly have some questions to answer. I once again took down a mini GPP, so I was kind of lucky. I mean, it's just that's the luck of DFS, no lie. And I'll start by saying I am a certified idiot. It was only a mini, and the Lineup Logic community was quick to point out that I could have won thousands of dollars with this particular score that I achieved, had I been willing to, say, enter it in some larger field tournaments with a higher buy-ins. Fern, particularly, shout out to Fern, a series of disappointed gifts to simply describe his series of emotions. You know, it was one of those things. I got to be completely honest with you. It was kind of lucky, kind of random. It was initially a Detroit stack mixed with some St. Louis righties, right? It was my only exposure to St. Louis. I wanted to make sure that at the minimum, if Pivetta regressed and you ate the Philadelphia bullpen, that I had some of these St. Louis righties. So I had a St. Louis righty stack, which was Jed Yurko, Almeidas Diaz, Tommy Pham, and Yadier Molina. Usually that is like the core 4-7 stack of the St. Louis order. They've been pretty productive lately, specifically Yurko and Pham, and Diaz actually has been productive as well. And Yadi had, so that was the heart of the order. And, you know, we know he attack Pivetta with righties. Well, okay, Diaz wasn't in the lineup. All right, so I had to pivot off of Diaz, and I decided, you know, all right, I'll pivot off of Diaz, and I had to get down off of Molina. So what do? I go down to Martin Maldonado, and I go up to Francisco Lindor. And between Francisco Lindor and Martin Maldonado, I got three home runs. You know, and then the Detroit stack worked out really nicely. They provided a really nice floor. They got to Paxton. And eventually Ian Kinsler came through with a home run. It was Miggy, Kinsler, Upton, and JD. And, you know, JD and Upton just kind of knocked the ball around. Kinsler leaves the yard. Miggy was productive as well. So it was, you know, it was a great score. And Carrasco at the top. It was a great score. I was really pumped. I think the important thing here, though, is, you know, and I'll say this a million times. Don't screw with your process. You know, the results are going to come and go. Don't screw with your process. And for me, creating, you know, 4 or 5 lineups of the core stacks that I like are always the way that I'm going to do it. And I've learned this in many, many different slates. You don't overexpose yourself. The minute that you start to change your betting process, your buy-in, all that kind of a thing, you can easily go right side up, because this is a fucking wild game that, you know, this is tough. So am I an idiot? Yeah, I'm an idiot. Could I have won a ton of money? Yeah. Don't tell my wife. Okay. So okay. Don't tell my wife. I'm not trying to pay the mortgage with the fucking, you know, with my FanDuel lineups. All right. One of those things. But in that, I think there's actually some lineup construction ideas that I want to talk about on the, you know, in the review here. So let's look back at last night. One of the things that, you know, sometimes people tweet at me or ask me, hey man, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? Line up this, line up that. The first thing that I always am going to say, you know, and this is, I guess this is just personal preference. And I know that some people don't feel like this is I am always at the core of what I'm going to try to do, minimum have a three-man stack of a team that I really like. And I encourage you to do the same. I encourage you to find a pitcher that you like, find a three or four man stack that you like, and then find the flexibility around that. I don't mind, you know, never mind if you're going to have, you know, pairs of batters after that or some one-offs after that. That's not the end of the world. But I think at the core of what we do in my process on a daily basis is I'm going to make four or five lineups, depending on the size of the slate. Okay, three to five lineups. Like today, with the short slate, I'll probably only make three lineups. Three to five lineups, okay? And at the core of each one of those lineups, I'm going to have one of my favorite stacks, right? I'm going to make sure that I get my four favorite bats from that stack. And based on cost, you know, I know I have a couple different pitchers that I can choose. You know, if this is a core stack, for example, then I'm going to have to find one of my more inexpensive pitchers. Whereas if this is, you know, you know, the Detroit stack, which was not very expensive, I'm going to be able to pay up for pitcher and then find my value pieces around that. I think that's a really smart way to approach. And because baseball is such a high variance sport, you guys know, and Josh has talked about this, I'm pretty much entering GPPs only. The cash game single bullet lineup is just too difficult. I do that with NBA. You know, I have that ladder structure where you start with 50-50s and double ups, and you increase your exposure as you go all the way up to GPPs. Because NBA is much more linear, it's much more predictable. You can get a sense of how your lineup should perform in a much better way. Whereas baseball, you can get a double dong from Martin Maldonado. It throws the whole fucking night into a twist, you know? And that's why it's GPP, is you get your exposure to different teams in different spaces. So that's an idea about lineup construction. I don't know. But I do know we got two really nice six-game slates today. So I got early game breakdown. I got late game breakdown. I don't want to waste too much time. Give you guys plenty of time to jump into your early lineup. So let's look at this early slate, and then I'll talk about the late slate. All right, so on the early slate, like I said, six games on here, some really, really nice games, actually, if we, you know, for fantasy purposes, kind of a lot of fun. So looking at it, it's going to start at 105, okay, just so you guys know. 105 start. First game is a Cardinals-Phillies game. 8.5 runs projected here. Carmo versus Aaron Nola. Last night, Phillies projected under 4 runs. That line has moved just a touch. Now Phillies are projected right at 4 runs. Obviously, Carmo is in a really good spot here. You got to like Carmo here going up against this Phillies team that really has been pretty inept. And striking out a ton. So no problem with Carlos Martinez, but he will be the chalk. Aaron Nola, I keep wanting to go back to this guy. I just don't know when a good opportunity is for him. I keep trying to figure out what that moment is. I just kind of want to see him take that big step like we've seen Nick Pivetta take. And, you know, Pivetta got eventually kind of regressed last night, actually. I don't know. But you know, you want to see some of these young Phillies pitchers like take that next step and show you that they have some stuff. And Nola hasn't done that, so I don't know if I can go to him yet. White Sox Twins, 10.5 runs projected here in Target Field. This one is, this game is amazing. I love this matchup, but the problem is you got massive rain problems here. you know, the nice thing is it's supposed to be a 1 o'clock start. And so, you know, you could see they could wait this out for a while this afternoon, because the rain chances do start to get better after 2 o'clock. So, you know, the rain starts to go out of the area after that. So certainly have some interest in this game. Jose Quintana versus Nick Turley. We get a lefty on the mound of both sides. So, you know, we can definitely look at the righties here in this spot. Blue Jays, Rangers, 10.5 runs projected here as well. Weather is not a problem in Texas Stadium down there in, well, not Texas Stadium. It's the football. Down in Arlington and Globe Life. Five and a half runs projected for the Jays as they go up against Martin Perez. That seems about right. And the Rangers are only getting 4.9 pitching hitting against Marcus Stroman. I will be interested to see how Stroman does. I love Marcus Stroman. I just like his game. I think he's a control pitcher. I just love the way he works. I like control pitchers. You know, they just frustrate the hell out of hitters. They make quick innings. I think they're good. Maybe I just said I like them in real life. But I think this is an interesting spot for Stroman. Texas is a fly ball team, and can they lift the ball against him? Maybe. And the problem is when you lift the ball against Stroman, you score home runs. He throws the ball really hard, and when it gets up, it goes. Pirates Brewers, 9 runs projected here, and this is just about a pick 'em with Ivan Nova going up against Chase Anderson. Obviously, you got to like Anderson as the home pitcher here. He certainly has shown a lot of talent recently. Pirates, though, low strikeout team, you know, kind of been chipping away. Low strikeout team chipping away here, and Anderson. You know, I just wish he had a little bit more killer instinct and a little bit more K upside. He's had some really great K performances, but some not so great K performances. And then we got Coors. 11.5 runs projected here in Coors. Zach Godley going up against Senzatella. I can't believe the Rockies are favored here. Senzatella is not even close to as good of a pitcher as Godley. But here's the issue. Godley's good, by the way. There are so many pitchers that you just wish that you could go to on a regular basis between this Colorado and these Arizona staffs. They get into these ballpark situations you just can't touch. Godley's good. The numbers on Godley are impressive, really are. Sierra, XFIP, pitch values, it's all there. But he throws his curveball 22% of the time, and this is probably what Vegas is telling us, that Godley's curveball is going to be a problem for him in Coors Field. Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. So, will he throw the curveball? Will he rely on, a wider array of pitches? I don't know, but I'll tell you what. I trust Arizona against a righty. They showed us last night. They 14 runs, they smack the ball. This team makes a lot of good hard contact. And in Coors Field, they have no problem moving the base paths. They didn't even leave the yard once. Well, they left the yard once last night, and they still put up 14 runs. So against Senzatella, yeah, I'll take that. Senzatella is mediocre at best. He's got problems with lefties. So we'll talk about it. Astros Athletics, this is the last one here on the early slate. David Paulino versus Jesse Hahn. I think it's interesting. The Astros are projected for 5.3 runs, but Hahn is kind of this, like, limits the damage, doesn't let you hit the ball very hard. He doesn't allow a lot of hard contact. He's mostly inducing ground balls. He's navigated some really tough matchups, and I don't know necessarily that I would agree that Hahn is going to struggle this much against the Astros. I think he already pitched him once in Houston, which is certainly not a way. By the way, great article by Casey Bogeslaw yesterday about where to find cheap home runs, and just tons of interesting stuff about barrels and hard contact and WRC plus and all of this stuff. You got to read it. Casey Bogeslaw, follow him on Twitter. He's a guy behind MLB Barrel Alert. Anyway, he's talking about how it's really easy to hit home runs in Houston. There's cheap home runs to be had because of the Crawford boxes and the way batters pull the ball. Makes total sense. This is not that ballpark, and Hahn is not a guy who gives up a lot of home runs. He just pitched the Yankees, did great. And he pitched in Houston and pitched a gem there as well. So I don't necessarily think I need to roster Han, but I'm not going to go out of my way to pick on him in this spot. And I think the reverse is more interesting. The A's against Paulino. Paulino gets barreled up, man, and the A's have one of the highest barrel rates. One of the highest barrel rates in MLB. All right, so that's the early slate. I'm going to jump into the early slate player breakdown right now, give you guys a quick lineup, go through that, and then I'll go to the late slate. All right, so if we're looking at the early slate, I think I'm going to give you guys two pitchers and some offense suggestions. I think for me, the early slate pitcher is obviously Carmo against Philadelphia here. He's the only under four runs. You got to pay attention like this. And last night it was under four runs, 3.9. Now it's just above that. He's a commanding pitcher. He's got the best numbers on the slate. He's always in control. We saw him in Baltimore against even probably a better offense. 28% strikeout rate, 11% swinging strike rate. You know, the best part is there are even more strikeouts in this lineup. Philadelphia is striking out at almost a 27% rate to right-handed bats. So the question that you have to deal with Carmo is, can you stomach the massive ownership? I think in my case, I'd rather be in on the best pitcher on the slate in the best situation than out on him. So I will definitely have some Carlos Martinez and just kind of, you know, deal with the fact that everybody else likes him too. And hey, we all have the best pitcher. Who can pick the good bats? So that to me is where I'm at with Carmo. If you want to pivot, I think Stroman will be a popular option as well, because he's actually pretty affordable at 9K in Texas. You know, the thing that I will say about Stroman is he's got a 60% ground ball rate, 13% K to walk ratio with almost a 2.7-1 ground ball to fly ball. He only allows 30% hard contact. Yes, he's gotten rung up for some dingers. He has. He certainly has. Some guys hit dingers off of him, you know. Because once if he gives up a fly ball, it's going. It's pretty much a home run every time. His home run to fly ball rate is really, really high. The problem is he doesn't give up that many fly balls. And he induces a lot of soft and medium contact, all that kind of thing. Texas, they have a decent fly ball rate, actually. They really like to loft the ball. They're one of those teams, top 10 in fly ball rate, like the Oaklands of the world. That said, they also strike out a lot. They have the second highest strikeout rate to right-handed bats at 27%. So, you know, I like that a lot. You know, if Stroman is great, if he gets cooking and he gets, he gets deep into a game, that's the best part about this guy. I mean, he can go 7, 8, 9 innings. And I got to be honest with you, that line last night for the Texas game seemed a little bit fishy. Of course, Toronto blew it up, as I kind of expected. Biagini had a nice outing. And Spector was all over that. He was like, you know, I just trusted Vegas, and I liked the Toronto side a lot more than the Texas side. And so he went to the Toronto side, and it worked out for him. And I think that that's going to be the same thing today. I don't necessarily believe that Stroman's going to get lit. Now, he does give up home runs sometimes, and he can get lit. So there is some risk here. That's the difference between him and Martinez. Martinez really doesn't get lit that much. And, you know, you're not really too worried about the Phillies lighting him up. Chase Anderson is an honorable mention here at 9,200. I love Chase Anderson, and there's a lot of situations in which I will start Chase Anderson. Pittsburgh, though, they just don't strike out a lot. They're kind of hot. Anderson is also kind of hot. Like, he's been pitching really, really well recently. Here's what I'll say. We saw Anderson in his most recent matchup in, like, one of the most high strikeout opportunities that there was against San Diego, okay? They swing at everything. Now, they're much better against right-handers than they are against left-handers. That is true. I believe it's right-handers versus left-handers. It's against lefties and it is righties. So they're pretty bad against righties. Sorry, got that turned around. Against San Diego, he pitched really well as far as like a real world outing. Like he had a great game, but he didn't get over 40 and he still gave up two home runs. He didn't break double digit strikeouts. San Francisco, similar to Texas in strikeout rate and kind of, you know, like kind of a weak offense against, he pitched great against them, but he only had four strikeouts. I think the thing that I'm worried, the upside came against San Francisco because he went into the seventh inning and the team got the win. The Milwaukee offense right now is just kind of terrible, and I can't necessarily trust the win. Here's what I think would happen in this game, and this is kind of why I'm off of Anderson. Four strikeouts, two earned runs, six innings. So you get the quality start, but a no decision maybe, that's 30 points. I'm just not that interested in it. I think you can get 30 points from a lot of other pitchers out here on this slate, you know, with access to a little bit more upside. So I don't know. I could be wrong about Chase Anderson. Anderson could blow up the Pirates today, and I would love that. But the Pirates are, I feel like the Pirates are very sneaky on Thursday afternoons. They're good. I've seen them own some Thursday afternoon slates. Coors, let's talk about Coors. Let's talk about the bats. We got Zach Godley versus Antonio Senzatella. Here's what I'll say about Godley. I love Godley. All right, nasty curveball. It's grading out as one of the best pitches on the slate, and he throws it 31% of the time. But that is a fucking problem, Zach. Don't do it. It's not going to work in Coors. You know, and the Arizona staff knows that. That's the thing, right? So what is he going to have to do? He's going to have to pound the curveball, or excuse me, pound the changeup, pound the fastball, that kind of thing. But he's got a 60% ground ball rate. I mean, that is excellent. You have that kind of a ground ball rate, I'm not going after this guy. And I don't understand exactly how Vegas thinks that Colorado is going to get over on a 60% ground ball rate. Now, the issue and the question that I have is where, you know, is it the curveball that is inducing those, you know, is it the curveball that's inducing all of the ground balls? You know, I'm not really sure. And in fact, I just realized I can figure this out by going to brooksbaseball.com. By the way, guys, you want to know a lot about the pitcher that you're looking at? Brooksbaseball.com. These are the guys who do all the pitch FX stuff. So Zach Godley, here we are. Okay. He is... Yeah, I mean, it's... Ground balls. I mean, the change is actually the pitch that gets the ground ball for him. Interesting. The ground ball, his four seam is kind of getting destroyed. None of his pitches are getting lit. I mean, his four seam, but he's really not throwing his fastball that much. It's a sinker. It's a change. It's a curve. It's a cutter. And the two primary pitches that he's working on are a sinker and a curve. And that's a problem. I mean, that's the problem. That's why you can't start Zach Godley in this situation, because you're relying on two pitches that move and move drastically, and they're going to induce ground balls. And it's just not, that's not going to happen. The change is clearly a ground ball pitch for him. But if he's going to try to rely on his two bread and butter pitches of the curveball and the cutter, or excuse me, and the sinker, those pitches just aren't going to move the way that they move when he is, you know, in other matchups. So, unfortunately, Zach Godley is not in play here. I just don't think that Colorado is going to be able to get over on him. They just don't hit righties that well. They proved that last night. Senzatella versus Arizona, though, he is an insanely below-average pitcher. 17% strikeout rate, 6% swinging strike rate, limited hard contact, limited fly ball rate, but also not a great ground ball rate either. He's got an xFIP of 3.3, because I guess he just doesn't walk people that much, but a Sierra of 4.5. Here's where we find Senzatella's weakness. His splits reveal that he is not great against lefties at home. Okay? He has problems with lefties, and those problems get magnified in Coors Field. So, Blanco, Peralta, Lamb, I have no problem with those three guys. Also, by the way, Chris Herrmann is a lefty if he's in there. You know, they platoon those catchers. We know that. So Chris Herrmann is interesting as well. So I have no problem with the lefties in the Arizona lineup. You know, And in fact, he actually allows the highest home run to fly ball rate on the slate. So if you're looking for possibly a little exposure to Coors, I think it is the Arizona lefties in this one. I just, you know, Arizona, they're just so good at home that I love starting them at home. But I was encouraged by 14 runs last night. That was impressive. That was impressive. And they're clearly beating up the Colorado bullpen, which is a problem. You know, that is a problem. You keep stringing together those extra base hits and you burn through that bullpen pretty good. So that's where we're at with Coors. All right. Now, away from Coors, there's three stacks that I like. The first is the White Sox against Nick Turley. Now, God, I really hope this game plays. The thing that I like is, like I said, the weather should be clearing as the game progresses. And rather than, they don't have a doubleheader, you know, so they're not playing again tonight. So they could wait until 2:30, 3 o'clock to start this game. And then if the weather's totally clear from then on, I think we'll see that. So keep your eyes on weather reports and stuff like that. Kevin Roth, unfortunately, is off right now, which is, like, so stressful. Because I just, like, I will obviously just search Twitter for Kevin Roth every, you know, 2 hours and be like, what do you got for me, Roth? But anyway, the White Sox against Turley, this is a dream spot, man. We don't get the White Sox against lefties a lot, but this is the one. I want this. The White Sox are hitting everybody, by the way. They're hitting righties just as well as they're hitting lefties. They hit Berrios for a couple of runs last night. Berrios, though, man, kid is filthy. Kid is filthy. That was just talent. That was just more talent than the White Sox had bats. So, again, he is an elite. He's becoming an elite pitcher. I love that kid. I didn't have the guts to start him, but I like him a lot. Looking at Turley, Turley's a problem. Turley has some issues here. As a lefty, getting smashed by righties, only a 15% K rate. You know, he's mostly a ground ball guy, but he still allows 40% hard contact, and he's got an xFIP in Sierra at 4.9. You know, you look at the splits, and so here's the problem. We don't have a ton of data on this kid. The issue, the thing that I see is, you know, he was good in AAA. He was really good in AAA, but it seemingly is just not translating to the bigs. Will he figure it out? Yeah, I hope so. I always hope that somebody figures it out, but he's had plenty of time to do so. I mean, and he's kind of a journeyman, you know, and he floated around in the Yankees. He floated around with the Giants and the Red Sox, and now he's on the Twins. He's always been very good in AAA, but he's never really gotten called up, and his first time he gets called up, he gets shelled. So, I don't necessarily think that Turley is invincible here. So I'm going after him with the White Sox. Melky, Abreu, Frazier, Davidson, Avisel Garcia, Willie Garcia, if he's in there, but I think he was hurt for a while. I'm not really sure. Actually, I think I just saw the White Sox lineup. The White Sox lineup is Anderson, Abreu. What? Why is it doing this? I just saw it and changed it back to tentative lineup. Yeah, Anderson, Cabrera, Abreu, Garcia, Frazier, Davidson. So 2 through 6 are my favorite right there. Cabrera, Abreu, Garcia, Frazier, Davidson. You know, Davidson versus Cabrera, you kind of have a poor man's Justin Smoke, Kendrys Morales problem on your hand. Abreu and Davidson there. So either one is good for me. I think, Todd Frazier's, Matt Davidson's just really hot right now, but so is Abreu. But just don't leave Melky out. Melky is hitting righties really, really well and lefties really well. He's hitting everybody. So don't leave Melky out. So that's the one stack that I really like. I think if you want to pay up a little bit, you can go to Toronto against Martin Perez. Perez is allowing the second highest hard contact rate on the slate. Very mediocre as well. This is like Antonio Sensatella with a worse hard contact rate. 17% K rate, 8% K to walk ratio, serious issues with right-handers, like bad issues with right-handers. So for me, the Toronto stack would be Pilar, Donaldson, Smoke, all wOBAs above 100, ISO marks above above 400, ISOs above 250 this year. And then I think Russell Martin and Steve Pearce are in play as well. If you want a little access to the back half of the lineup, Steve Pearce is back, man. Steve Pearce is a righty who hits righties. And he was hurt for a while. Just don't sleep on Steve Pearce. He's good. He's a great batter. He's in his career numbers prove that he hits righties, you know, as well as his season numbers. So he's a great way to get access to this lineup. You know, the thing is you got to be, I think, be careful. Your instincts are going to tell you maybe Bautista or Tulo. They're just not hitting right now. They're not hitting lefties. So I'm not touching those guys. I think, you know, they could regress. Fine. Sure. Great. They're not doing it right now. And I don't think I have to have them. And Bautista, especially at that price, I'm just not interested. So Pilar, Donaldson, Smoke, maybe Pearce. That's what I'm interested in. You also can look at Darwin Barney, by the way, because Devin Travis has been out of the lineup. Barney's playing, you know, and he's a punt shortstop at 2000 who, you know, for whatever reason hit the ball last night. And if he's up in the lineup or correlated with anybody interesting, you can use him as well, just because if they're moving this lineup around, because Perez is getting knocked around, then he's going to get an extra plate appearance or two. So I don't mind that. I don't mind that either. I think the last place that I may have some exposure is Oakland. Oakland against Paulino. Paulino gets barreled, man. He gets barreled up. He's at a huge barrel rate. You know, looking at Casey Bogeslaw's barrel chart here, Paulino has a 4.82 barrel FIP with it the slate high 7% barrel rate. Now, he's got a nice K to walk ratio. He does some really nice things. You know, we know the kid can get some strikeouts at 23% strikeout rate. Problem is when you get hit that hard and you allow your home run rate like that, that's a problem. That's a problem. And it's a problem when you go to Oakland, a team that wants to hit fly balls, wants to barrel the ball they have a 5.4. The Tigers have the highest barrel rate on the slate at 5.5, but the Oakland has a second highest at 5.4. So I have no problem with going to the top of the lineup. I especially don't have a problem with Oakland because of how damn cheap they are. You can get a 1-2-3 batter all for under $3,000. If it's Matt Joyce, Chad Pinder, and Jed Lowry, all those guys are under $3,000. It's ridiculously cheap. You know, Chris Davis is $3,600, fine. I don't think you have to have him here, but we know that Davis hits right-handed pitching really well. The other guy is Yonder Alonso. He's $3,000, and he hits righties really pretty well too. So the only issue that I do have with the Oakland stack, and the reason I'm not all in on Oakland, is they do hit left-handed pitching a lot better than they hit right-handed pitching. Ask Jordan Montgomery and Michael Pineda. So I'll take the cheap guys. I will take the cheap guys. I will take Lowry. I'll take Pinder, Joyce, you know, and fill them in around some of my more expensive bats. I think that's what I'll do. The nice thing is they also fill second base and shortstop cheaply, which I hate second base and shortstop. So that's always good. And they're at the top of the order. And this team, you know, we know they can string together some runs. Everybody can hit home runs. So, that's a good thing. I don't mind Oakland in this spot. All right, so I got two lineup ideas for you guys on the early slate here. Let's go ahead and take a quick look at that early slate lineup, figure out what we want to do here with these early lineups. All right, so the first one, just because I have it up right now, is a Coors lineup. All right, so let's say we want to go to Coors, and let's just play it safe here. We're going to take the lefties. We're going to take the top of the lineup. Blanco, Peralta, Lamb, right there. Expensive, yes, but they correlate really, really, really well with a four-man Oakland stack which is unbelievably inexpensive and so, so wonderfully affordable. Now, my only hope is that Matt Joyce is up in this lineup. Now, if Matt Joyce isn't in this lineup, then we're going to have to make some pivots. However, I think Matt Joyce will probably be somewhere in towards the top of this lineup. So I go Matt Joyce in the outfield, Chad Pinder at shortstop, Jed Lowry at second base, Yonder Alonso at first. I mean, that's crazy that I can get 1 through 5 right there. Those four guys, just minus Chris Davis, 1 through 5. It's a four-man stack, ideal situation for them. You know, these are the guys you want. They're going to be productive, and pair them with Coors. And all I have to do is punt catcher, and I'm looking at Elias Diaz, a Pittsburgh catcher. Why not? He's been in the lineup recently. He's been really good. Possibly need a different catcher. And I can fit Marcus Stroman at the top. I mean, that's great. That's great stuff. To have a high-quality pitcher, Coors, and a four-man stack, I'm saving this lineup. I'm probably going to use this lineup. GPP, figure out how, you know, I think this is a unique lineup to have Coors and Oakland together. It's very interesting to me. Now, if you want to do a non-Coors lineup, okay? Let's say we want to do a non-Coors lineup. So I'm going to look at White Sox, all right? I am going to look at the White Sox here, and I am going to get I'm going to go off of a – oh, God, I don't know if I want to go off of Abreu. Yeah, I'm going to go off of Abreu to Davidson. Okay, I was going to go Davidson, but I think I'm going to go off of Abreu to Davidson. All right, so it's going to be it's going to be Davidson, Melky, and Avisel Garcia. Those are my three White Sox that I'm going to have. Okay, I could have Tim Anderson there at shortstop as well, and I don't mind Tim Anderson. You know, 2800. I don't think that's the worst thing that you could do. You could have your leadoff batter. We'll see. I had this lineup set, and I had to make some pivots. But at third base, I'm gonna go with Josh Donaldson. I love Josh Donaldson, and then I'm gonna go with a Toronto outfielder to correlate with him. Steve Pierce might be dealing with a knee, so I'm gonna go with Kevin Pillar. He is cheap. And then that is going to leave me with $2,900 for second base and shortstop. And I think I know exactly where I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go Jed Lowry, Chad Pinder. Boom. And I have $2,500 left for catcher. Let's see. That is going to put me on Russell Martin right there. Boom, I talked about him already. So, three-man Toronto stack, kind of, you know, the righties throughout the core of the lineup. You get Pillar probably at the one, Donaldson probably at the three, I would guess. He's been batting third, I'm thinking so, and Martin maybe at the five or the six. That's pretty solid. And then I have a core of the order White Sox stack with Melky, Avisel Garcia, and Matt Davidson. Hopefully this won't kick, but won't come back to bite me for fading Abreu. You can fit Abreu, by the way, if you just make some changes. Like, you could do Abreu and Todd Frazier, and then I think that actually worked perfectly. And then you just got to change how much you pay for catcher. Jed Lowry, Chad Pinder as my pair there. Hopefully they're at the top of that order, 2-3 maybe. Cheap and easy to get those guys. You know, they're on-base guys. They're not going to blow my doors off, but they can hit home runs. They do have some pop in their bats, and they're cheap. So, three-man White Sox, three-man Toronto stack. Carmo. Oh, I forgot to say, this is the Carmo lineup. This is Carmo. So, Carmo at the top, Matt Davidson, Melky Cabrera, Avisel Garcia, Russell Martin, Josh Donaldson, Kevin Pillar, Jed Lowry, and Chad Pinder together. So 3-3-2 Love 3-3-2s. Love 3-3-2s with a high-quality pitcher. So I'm definitely going to save this lineup as well. I like this lineup a lot. I think you just got to wait for Toronto's lineup. They might be a goofy lineup. Some of those guys are banged up and old, so they sometimes get goofy lineups out there. So that's it. That's the early slate, guys. I'm going to go ahead and create a new recording for the late slate, good luck on the early slate, and I'll talk to you soon. Check out the late slate show. It's coming up.